Thank you for joining us today at A View Beyond the Ordinary. I'm your host, Jolene Lenz. I interview some courageous souls who share their extraordinary story with the goal of helping us pursue our bliss. Let's get started and tune in. Today's guest is Benjamin Cox. And Benjamin, I'm so grateful you're here. So thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to hang out with interesting people.
Well, thanks again. And I am curious too, Benjamin, in terms of what led you down the career path, and I want to just, you know, let everybody in the audience know, I am part-time, I consult in the mining industry. That's where my path with Benjamin intersected. So what led you down the path you're doing today?
I'm being really good at getting fired. So part of the problem we have when we try to lead paths is there's two concepts. One is that we are going to get on, we're going to strap our backpack in, and we're going to go to a destination. And two is we are going to walk the path that opens up in front of us. And being neurodivergent, being different, being fundamentally someone who fails a lot, I have learned that the path that I get on every day is based purely on what is in front of me and what is accessible, and being joyfully present with what I can do right now. So what I'm doing right now might not be my life's work. It might not be where I thought I was going to be 5 years ago, but I, no matter what it is, I can, if I do it with joy, it will be an amazing thing to do, and I will do an incredible job with it.
I love that. And I love that you said that you don't worry about, or that you've had failure in your life. I think our society is so predisposed, or they're so worried about, oh my gosh, what happens? What will other people think of us? I personally think failure is the path that helps get us to where we're meant to be next. So it sounds like you're letting things flow. And you said a key word there, Benjamin, present. You really focus on being present.
I think everyone needs, sorry, let me rephrase the statement. I believe that being present is my core driver. I believe that one of the things that we live is we live in a world of fractured glass. We live in a world where fundamentally the holy, the divine, the spiritual, the everything requires us to bleed. We can't actually pick up. There's this lovely Kabbalah term which shows up in Leonard Cohen's music, which is the fractured glass is what lets the light in. But when you go to pick up fractured glass, by definition, it's glass, but it's sharp. It doesn't come clean. Nothing that we get that's amazing comes clean. So you have to sit in the combination of the, this is going to be unbelievably painful. This is going to be hard. This is going to be difficult. And you have to celebrate both the positive and the negative. As Brené Brown says perfectly, it's impossible to live in joy without also living in sorrow, without also carrying both sides of the coin. You have to actually live in both. And we as a Western society, we live in a duality where we're only going to chase the dopamine. We're only going to chase the highs. All social media is going to be about how everything is great. I would love to see more people say, I got fired this week because I could not do X. I am going to rearrange my life because I am good at Y. Versus, I need to fit into the box that society has said it makes me look best because my best side is this side versus this side. We need to separate those two things. And that's what I've done with my life.
Well, I am thrilled that you have done that. I think when other individuals do that, it paves the way. It showcases, Benjamin, what joy is. And I think we have, as a society, we focus on fame, money, whatever that is, thinking that, oh, if I stay at my job another 5 years and I continue to build my, you know, 401k, that that's going to be happiness in the end. And what I find and I'd be curious what you're seeing too, especially since you also teach, is that when we really follow presence and being ourselves, most importantly, being ourselves and are true to ourselves with what you just said, that means sometimes we say no to things and people don't like that. They let us go and we take a new path. But that happiness is being ourselves and being the truth of that. Anything you want to share about that?
I think also happiness requires separating all decisions in your life into two baskets. Finite baskets, decisions that you make that have a beginning, middle, and end, and infinite baskets, decisions that you make that you have no clue what the end of the story is. We try to treat our infinite wars as if they're finite. If only I get the next promotion, my career is going to be good. Well, your career is an infinite war. Your career is an infinite spectrum of a war. Buying a car is a finite decision. You research, you do it, you buy the car, you live with it. It's a finite life of a decision. But most of the really important things in life are infinite. You don't make them once. You're making a series of real options over time. You're always constantly changing. And if you decide that you want to turn it into finite decisions, by definition, you are always going to be sad because you can never, ever end a finite decision, sorry, an infinite decision finitely and stay in joy.
Right. Interesting. And on that note, I know I mentioned to you earlier before this that I travel. Well, I've been to Europe just a few times, but in my travels there, I saw how out of balance our society is. And it kind of goes with this theme of work, work, work all the time. So I really, my last podcast was about really balance, you know, and how Italy helped, a trip to Italy helped me see that we focus on things that really, at the end of the day, the end of our life, when we're on our deathbed, I don't think are going to really matter that much. So, in terms of your travels, especially because you've been globally all over the world, how do you think we do as a Western culture in the US, specifically in terms of, you know, balance?
I think it's interesting. I think one of the things that we have done in the post-war is we've made the decision that we can support monocultures. We've made the decision that in the pursuit of scale, we can have our shopping be out 6 miles from town in the strip mall, and we can have our schools be massive, and we have everything be massive, and we can split our life between a monoculture design. We are not fundamentally unifying our lives into a dynamic culture. And you can see this. There's this lovely podcast called Strong Towns. There's an entire movement back to diverse culture design. But one of the problems that you get with monoculture design, one of the problems you get from a balance perspective, is when you don't inherently acknowledge that in all of us is both a yin and a yang. All of us can carry a feminine and a masculine energy. All of us carry a work and a home life balance. All of us carry a series of balancing acts that we have to maintain. With the monoculture design, we make the decision that we can get the biggest car, the biggest horsepower, the biggest this, without realizing that also means we must also spend time walking or spend time doing something to balance that energy. So one of the things that we have lost in the West is we've lost that fundamental, and in Hebrew, they call it Derech Eretz, which is connection to the planet. We have lost that connection to the earth, the connection to what we are depleting, to the universe that we are consuming, because we're so focused on fitting inside that monoculture. And that's where the conflict comes in America today, because you have got a need to maintain the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s post-war monoculture that was created, which you can see in one of our political parties. And then you have this need to create something else without any understanding that what they're creating is a reflection of the original monoculture. So it's the anti-monoculture without understanding that what they're trying to create. So you have these two people who are fighting over the issue that America was not designed for humans. It was designed for a monoculture. It was designed for scale. It was designed for growth. It was designed that we can be the biggest, best, and whatever. And we are the richest country in the world in all the metrics that matter. But we're also incredibly poor because we don't diversify into supporting a balance.
I totally agree. I was going to say we could go deeper in this healthcare. There's so many things out of balance that I see in our culture overall, and the amount of work that we do compared to other cultures. Do we work more when you go to, I know, you know, obviously Italy, but some of the other countries, I'm curious, Benjamin, are we really driven in terms of 50, 60 hours? Do most cultures work like this?
So I think in a lot of the world, it can take a half a day to go to the post office and to deal with the utility bill. One of the things that we don't understand is how much we have saved energy in other systems and how we set up our lives so we have energy to spend. All humans are going to consume roughly the same amount of energy every day. The more efficiency you get in other parts of your life, the more you will start to invest into work or into something to give life meaning. So I
Right.
don't necessarily think that we work more than other people. I think we spend more time at work because we made everything else so much easier.
Interesting. Oh, that's fascinating. I have not heard that. So thank you for sharing that perspective. What do you do too, in terms of for you? You mentioned being present as one of your core values or just what you really focus on. How do you stay balanced in a world, especially living here in the US? Do you live part of your time in US and part in Canada? How does that work for you?
So I live because I'm a single dad with 24/7 parenting of kids who are neurodiverse. So, a complicated story. I live year round in Beaverton, Oregon now. Used to be Portland, now Beaverton. I moved one town over. I travel a lot. I travel probably 6 to 10 weeks a year for work because that's how I get paid, because it's the joy of being a single dad. You actually have to make a living. But the rest of the time, I'm here. And I think the key for me to maintaining balance inside this world that I live in is, I think, threefold. One is sleep. I maintain 8 hours a night of sleep, and I make that a religious requirement. I just shifted my teaching schedule to actually make it so that I could go to sleep on a more regular basis, because I realized that was something that was very much affecting my balance. The second thing I focus on is I focus on the other health items. So mental health, I start every day by diarying. Most days when I'm not teaching first thing in the morning, I will diary for an hour. I'll spend an hour reflecting on emotional stuff. I think in the last 2 years, I've diaried probably 250,000 words, 250 or 300,000 words. Then I spend a bunch of time focusing on eating, focusing on going to the gym, focusing on the little tiny things. One of the things I've learned in the last 2 years, which has been a massive shift for me, is if I want to do something and I can do it for 90 days, it will become religion-ish for me. So, like, I have this soup bowl that I fill up every day at lunch with dry mixed salad greens. Why? Because I watched a video on Amazon where they said, not Amazon, on Netflix, where they said a healthy gut requires eating 26 fruits and vegetables a week. I figured out a salad mix was 11. So I'm like, okay, if I eat a salad, bowl of salad every day, I'm halfway there every day. So I just literally have a bowl of salad. And for the first 2 months, I was like, this is boring. This is plain. And now my brain is like, lunch does not start without a bowl of salad. So a lot of what I'm learning to do is I'm learning to hack the routine, hack the mundane into the holy, versus trying to hack the holy into the mundane.
Smart. And to be able to do that, I was going to say one of the podcasts I listened to, The Diary of a CEO, I believe it's called, is a great one for health tips, nutrition tips. And I've been learning so much about that. And eating a salad every day, a bowl of that, Benjamin, what a great way to have energy, since we talked about energy, to maintain energy and to keep yourself balanced and focused and everything else. So in terms of just looking at the corporate world, the business world, what do you think we could do, or what does the business world need more of?
The business world needs more balance. We need to actually actively have discussions about how we're going to separate the short term and the long term. We need to value the things that don't show up on the balance sheet. So when I my the core of my work, the finite core of my work is, how do you attach a value to something that doesn't show up under IFRS? How do you get people to understand that what we are doing is we are treating accounting as a religion, and we're documenting accounting, and we're keeping score of accounting, yet most of what we touch does not show up on the balance sheet. Most of what we touch does not show up inside of an accounting spreadsheet, does not show up from that perspective. So when water is free for a mining company, we don't value the water. We use the water. Even though the water might unlock $100 of revenue, it doesn't show up as a depletion, as a fundamental use of the balance sheet. So one of the things that we need to do to change business, to change everything, is we need to start acknowledging natural capital. We need to start acknowledging that we're not just depleting financial capital, we're depleting people, we're depleting land, we're depleting water, we're depleting other things for the privilege of profits. And that's not a bad thing. That is life. We're not going to stop copper mining forever. What we need to do is we need to actually get people to the point where, like in the mining industry, for example, where maybe if every shift started with a moment of silence for the ore body. Just, we're going to spend 30 seconds just saying, this is one ore body. We get one shot at it. How can we make sure we recover the most metal for the climate energy transition? How do we make sure that we fundamentally maximize the value to communities, to the town, to the people? Let's just spend 30 seconds just thinking about that as our core fundamental calling. If you switch to that as your calling, then all the problems we face, the value, the local water conflicts, the recovery issues, the impurities, the tailings dam, the moment you shift to spending that 30 seconds of a sacred pause, you can fundamentally shift the fundamental core morality, at which point everything is more profitable.
Goosebumps there. I was going to say, keyword, I'm going to pull out of what you just said is sacred. And also, I believe that would enrich the relations that you have with the community, you know, if you're dealing with tribal nations, everything else that you just referenced there, Benjamin, I think would really enrich everything about the operation. In terms of even collaborating deeper, if we did take a few minutes and we took some silence, and for me, that would look like prayer, but also using our intuition in a deeper way to connect with Mother Earth to. That's where I'm going with that. Maybe a little bit different than you, but.
I think that the moment that you attach prayer or the words Mother Earth to it, you are trauma triggering it for some people. I think that one of the things that we have to do is we have to be very aware that religion is a trauma trigger because religion is something that's been forced on people. That Mother Earth is a trauma trigger because people who are fundamentally of the Green Movement just hammer it in. We are going to hate you because of X. What I'm asking is a moment of silence to acknowledge that we are depleting something and we need to maximize the value of what we deplete. I am not asking for people to fundamentally become Buddhists or fundamentally understand how to tie their life into tantric principles to become unified with all of humanity around them. I'm asking people to just acknowledge that they're corporate capitalists and can they do it as best as possible with the minimum damage as possible to maximize the fundamental profits.
You know what? Very wise. That is a very wise statement. And I'm a bit of a woo-woo. I'm going to just be forthright. I am. So I agree. What I my verbiage could certainly cut off people. They won't even continue to listen. So I think what you're saying is a new approach and a way to connect with individuals that they're going to understand and actually maybe what's the word? Just integrate into their practice. So very, very wise, Benjamin. I appreciate that. That actually is a bit of education for me. In terms of you, too, you look at where you're going and what inspires you to, you know, what do you want to continue doing? What is inspiring you today?
So, what inspires me is the fact that I'm. I don't think 10 years ago I was doing a job I hated. I was the CEO of a junior mining company with a world-class asset, and I hated my job. I hated everything I did. I hated my life. I hated everything. And roughly 5 years ago, actually 6 years ago now, in a period of about 5 months, the new CEO damaged the company substantially. I had a concussion, which means I wear yellow glasses for the rest of my life because I have constant migraines of a certain sort. My wife figured out she was a lesbian. My mom got diagnosed with terminal cancer. In less than 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, and I lost my job. So in less than 8 months, all those things happened at once. And one of the things that that forced me to do is it forced me to realize that I could no longer strong arm the world. Up to that point, I was able to use my privilege to create a bubble for me that was safe, that was mine, that was protected, that was worked for me as an individual. But it did not work for the world around me. And one of the things that I had to do was I had to shatter going from an Orthodox Jew who lived inside a very safe, comfortable box, ending up in a queer, poly, kinky, alternative world, because that's where my now ex-wife needs to live. And where I am the lowest of the low, because cishet white men don't matter. There's an infinite number of those in that world, and everything gets flipped. So what inspires me is very much not trying to hold on to things. I am trying to let go of the things that matter, and I'm trying to let go of the things that really work. I am a PhD, technically at University of British Columbia, I'm a PhD student. My title is PhD student. I also run the world's largest executive education program in the mining industry. We'll educate 350 students this year on a core fundamental business curriculum. So think about the title of PhD student, and then think about the fact that I run a program that has more graduates than all US and Canadian mining institutions combined, and I give them a real education and hold the dichotomy of, do I want the title professor? Doesn't really matter. Because that's something I have to own. That's something I have to hold on to. I don't need the title. I need to do the job. I need to show up. I need to be present. I need to make my students richer. And the work that I do by teaching them how to value natural resources, how to interface with the financial community, how to make decisions that are not single targeted but are goal posted, the work I do to enrich them so they can be really, really good leaders and can change the world is far more important than me maintaining the title of Professor Cox. I don't need to be a professor. I just need to be a teacher. I don't need to be a boss. I just need to be me. And I don't need to make more money. I mean, I could only wear 10 shirts.
Incredible. And you have gone through an incredible transformation and really learned what I think a number of us go through at certain points in our life is not being attached to anything. It's just allowing things to come in and go with the flow.
I think I'm attached to lots of things. I think I'm willing to accept that I'm capable of losing things. I think one of the things that is really, really interesting is we say, oh my God, to fundamentally come to enlightenment, you must lose attachment to everything. We're humans. We want to attach. But we have to be also be willing to accept that by attaching, we also have to be comfortable with that being lost. We have to accept that all attachment is fundamentally in the moment. It's not a permanent attachment. We don't get to carry all of our stuff with us. I was meditating this morning, and one of the things I realized was my father was attached to all of his projects. He was a famous blow up in the mining industry in the 80s, and he could never let go of his failures. And once he had one, and he carried it around, and two, and he carried around. By the time he had four things that he was carrying around, all of which were going to work one day, he had no space for a new success. So you have to be willing to try something, be incredibly attached to it, incredibly in love with it, all the while knowing at some point it will fail. At some point it's not going to work. But if you don't have that attachment phase, you will never do good work.
You know what? This has been absolutely fascinating. And I am going to walk away and ponder on this. I journal as well, and that's where I have some amazing revelations. Benjamin, you've given me a lot of food for thought, a lot of things to ponder, and I appreciate that as well as the audience will, because really, we're all learning and growing, and I agree fully on failure. I mean, let's don't judge ourselves and learn and grow. And it's been such a pleasure connecting with you and hearing more about your story. Fascinating, fascinating. And I am so grateful that you're out there doing what you're doing for the world. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's doing requires teaching, and teaching requires listening.
Thank you all for joining us in this journey today. We are so grateful that you're here. And if you would like to connect to one of the guests, I always share their information in the show notes on my website, which is jolenelenz.com. That's JOLINELENZ. And don't forget to also subscribe to the podcast. I'd certainly appreciate that. And I'm wishing you all much joy and fulfillment in your path ahead. Cheers, everybody.